the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast featuring the Crop Doctors.
Good afternoon from the Crop Doctors Podcast studio in Stoneville. Tom, no music. What's up with that?
I don't know. That's kind of what I was thinking. And obviously you were aware that the music was playing somehow or other. And I just kind of listened and waited for you to jump in there. So it's okay.
I was just watching it scroll past the music. I don't know why the music didn't play. So Tom and I have got Jared Hartke on the phone with us. Jared's taking time out of his afternoon to visit with us from the University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture. And that's as far as I take that particular title, Jared, because I'll just mess it up after that. So we told Foskey that last week, and that's all I can say of it.
No, that's perfect. Thanks for having me, guys.
Most of you know we are short a rice agronomist this year with Mississippi State, so Jared was gracious enough to come on with us, and we're going to talk about rice this afternoon. Jared, this is the first time you've been on with us. Tom's been on with us several times. Tom Barber. Foskey's been on with us a couple, two or three times,
I think. Spurlock's been on with us. Spurlock has been
when he came to
short course.
Yeah, the short course in Starkville. But this is the first time I've had Jared. When we start these, I always like to ask people a question, and somebody with your background and experience, this is a recurring question. In your time looking at rice across the state of Arkansas, what is the kookiest thing that you've ever gone to a field and seen?
Oh, the kookiest thing. Oh, that's a good one. The first one that jumped in my mind had to do with a fuel spill.
Okay.
And nobody could figure out what in the world was going on, and finally figured out that they had a fuel spill, or it was leaking. It was leaking from the fuel tank and being moved down the field, so it followed a weird water pattern. I'm like, what is going on? This rice is burning up, but it doesn't follow any pattern. I figured out that diesel tank was leaking and feeding out into the field. That was an easy fix, but it was bizarre for a while.
Especially coming from the top like that, because there's no drain or anything. It's just following the...
It meandered through the field.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it meandered.
If it was buckshot, it was following cracks.
So. No pattern.
Yeah. Finally figured it out.
I've seen stuff jump turn rows, like cornfield get sprayed, and it just be across pad from, say, a cotton field or something, and get a big rain and water, you know, a little bit of water wash over the pad, move some herbicide like that. I've seen stuff back out in the bottoms of fields, but that would be following the water first.
I've seen that. Bottom end of a cornfield blow out and sling some atrazine and stuff over a rice field. But yeah, it's the diesel one was unique.
Liquid fertilizer tanks busting, those are always nice. Those will be the gift that keep on giving for a while.
Always. It
changes up the soil texture a little bit in that spot. So, Jerry, we're middle of April, latter half of April. So, fast and furious over here. We got some rice in early, and then, of course, we had the big rain, knocked everybody out for a while. And I think y'all at least are going to have forecast of rain this week. So, what's going on in the rice world in Arkansas?
It is everybody still pressing as hard as they can go, even as we're talking right now in the face of rain chances. A couple of times this week, everybody's still operating under the "I'm going to make it make me stop." It's kind of how we're proceeding, even with as much as we have planted. You know, like I said, we're sitting here at mid-April, and a lot of Northeast Arkansas is done with rice. Certainly, say an extremely high percentage is all, you know, is already planted, and just lesser progress as you move down the state. Obviously, hopped across the river to y'all, and how big some of that rain was. Last week, some of the earlier planted stuff in Central and South Arkansas. It did fine with the first 2.5-inch rain, but then a day and a half later when the next 2.5-3-inch rain happened, that definitely nuked some levees. And so kind of going to cause a little bit of heartache over that looks a little rough around. But, you know, Northeast Arkansas, frankly, needed more of a rain, and a bunch of it didn't get that much. So we have some concerns over chemical activation and what we're going to do with weed control in the face of these winds.
Yeah, and the wind is harsh today. I think it's supposed to lay a little bit later in the week, but then, like you said, the chance of rain goes back up. I don't get the calls about planting progress or acres or anything like you do, or like a rice agronomist would over here. But questions I get and how I can translate that into where our crop is headed. One of the first big questions that I got starting in January, really before the dicamba deal occurred, the first part of February, up to that point, probably the number one question I had was, can I plant rice into this field that was treated with whatever fall residual herbicide? So that was an indication that we did have a greater interest in rice beyond what we would have had maybe when some seed was getting booked in the fall and some planting plans were being made. So we definitely moved some acres into rice, and hopefully we don't have to deal with too much of that carryover type stuff that we would have planting into a unlabeled fall treatment. So I think we're up, or will be up. I have no idea how to speculate on acres, Tom, other than I think it will be more than what we had in 23.
So I'm just sitting here shaking my head. I mean, I've not even thought about paying any attention to that.
Yeah, y'all should be up quite a bit. That's the expectation. And again, seed supply wasn't what it was. It would arguably be even higher, which, I mean, same is true for Arkansas. And ditto the fall applied residual when rice had slacked off in price a little bit, and beans were still a lot better back in the fall, and a lot of those applications were going out. And so, yeah, we got covered up. And so, again, beyond the seed, if all the seed was there and then that fall residual hadn't gone out on quite a few acres, there's no telling what the sky would have been on total acres across the upper Mid-South. But we definitely have some caps in place that are preventing us going too crazy.
Has seed supply and demand been the story so far with this crop, Jared?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is to a level nobody can remember in any kind of recent memory. I was trying to guess somewhere about 15 years ago, it may have been close to this tight, maybe still not even this tight, but maybe somewhere in that neighborhood. But yeah, this year it's a month or, six plus weeks ago. I mean, we were like, okay, there's none of this, all of that sold out, all that. I mean, we were down the fumes a long time ago, and we're staring at, I know we're fixing to launch into this other topic, but put it out there as a reminder, there's no replant seed. We're planting it all. We're planting all we got.
Is the seed, is it a product of demand with a strong acres, or was it something to do with seed production in 23, or the acres planted going way up after the forecasts were out for acres in 24, or some combination of the three?
The simple answer to all three is just yes. So, I mean, everything across the board kind of created a perfect storm of, we went through 10 plus years of, I mean, this is, I know, more of an Arkansas focused comment, you know, staring at acreage trends, but
that's fine.
As far as the Mid-South industry goes, I mean, what that does to our seed supply is, looking at the Arkansas part, we're playing that up and down acreage yo-yo, and we fell into a couple of down years. We expected last year to be up, you know, as part of that recovery, but nobody expected us to. You're planning a year to 2 years out for seed supply, and nobody was really expecting us to not only try to stay the same, but potentially go higher after a high acreage year. And so you run into a combination of, well, weren't planning for that, figured they'd slack back off some, and then Arkansas and the entire Mid-South, Mississippi, everybody trying to plant as much or more rice acres this year. Definitely some seed production issues coming off of last year, when you already weren't necessarily shooting for a really big number to have for this year. So all the dominoes have just kind of stacked up to make it really hard from a seed supply standpoint this year. So obviously has everybody's attention. Nobody's happy about what they didn't get of what they wanted for this year. So, my big caution has been, review a lot of the recommendations and research that's out there for what you are putting in the ground, because there's a lot of guys growing stuff they've never really even paid much attention to, certainly not grown in any recent years. So looking at some of those changes in management for different things you're putting in the grounds, how we're going to go about it and where the best fits are. And I know, again, a lot of this rice is already in the ground that we're talking about, same for y'all, but still going forward from here, one thing's getting in the ground, the next thing is how we how we manage it from here for the rest of the year. So we're going to have to be a little bit wary of that thing sneaking up on us.
How are they planning ahead for next year then? Is this going to be a recurring problem with seed supply, or is this just an issue for 2024 and that'll rectify itself for 2025?
It should rectify itself for 2025 because there'll be a ramped up effort to get back ahead of the bouncing ball in seed production this year. So it's hard to believe we'll stay anywhere near this high of acres that we're going for this year into 25. Nothing's impossible, but the intention, obviously, we're planting everything. There's no replant seed. Anything is for some excessive seed production this year to try to reach back out and get in front of it. And then if the acres back down a little bit, that'll start to smooth everything back out. So then we've got the supply we want. There's some replant seed if needed. You know, luckily most of the time we don't replant much rice. Extreme cases, yes, but so often, you know, stuff I look at, I'm out there going, well, it's a month later, so your yield potential is a little lower than it was. You've got this stand. It's not ideal, but you're probably not going to get a better yield outcome if you replant, you know, then, like, into May. When that's often happening, like your outlook's not any better. Now you're a month later and talk about y'all across the river on that soil and obviously some of our really heavy clay soils. I'm like, now you're a month later to harvest into this stuff and it's just going to get worse. Not just the yield outcome, but just management, potentially wet at harvest and rutting it up, and that rolls into the next year and now we're fighting from behind. So hopefully we can keep things straightened out and avoid some of those replant scenarios. But I know, right, again, there's not a replant, so we're going to keep what we have to have. And unfortunately, we're already hearing about some off-target movement and some pretty good hits on some emerged rice that we're going to be left with, well, we just got to keep it and grow it out, and it's going to be ugly.
Well, talk to us a little bit about that, Jared. So what things are you hearing right now? Because I know Jason has said he hasn't really heard much about that yet, at least in the Mississippi side of things. But what are y'all talking about on the Arkansas side of the river?
I mean, it's since we're still early enough that not a lot of things are up, but got quite a bit of rice, especially in northeast Arkansas, getting emerged and certainly taking off in even the central part. But a lot of Ramoxone and Roundup applications still going out, burning down other fields, other crops, things like that, and crops are up around now. So we're getting some of that movement and hit, you know, with what the wind's doing, and it's changing speed and direction a lot. So even well-intended applications that, you know, look like they should be good, where, you know, you're playing with that wind changing at a moment's notice while you're in the middle of making an application and getting risky. So again, you and your neighbors don't have fallback options. If we, you know, nuke a field of rice, there's not really anything to do. And now that we're getting the crop a little further along and starting to overlap residuals, starting to get in that vein of, well, what if you just got, you know, a residual down that's going to prohibit you from replanting to another crop, even if you wanted to. And there's been a couple of those I've already gotten wind of. Look, you're stuck to the rice that's out there. There's not an alternative. There's no other move now because those overlapping residuals are out there. So it's not like you can even punt to beans if you wanted to.
And I'll echo what you said about the replant, Jared, and probably we have changed our tune on that a little bit over the past, I mean, this has really been a problem for us for probably 12 years. 12 or 13 is the first years I remember going and looking at it in any big areas, halves of fields or whole fields or stuff. And I think over the years we've learned a lot and we've changed our tune on it, because exactly what you said about a plain replant due to environment, most of the time your crop is up. If it's April the 20th, it may be March 12th rice, because it's going to take a little bit longer for it to come up. And so it's been in the ground a while and it's gotten up and now it's gotten dinged or whacked, depending on the severity term you want to use, by some type of paraquat treatment. And so now you're just, say, the latter part of April into May, you've given up a month worth of the yield potential just on planting date. And in the case of this year, the replant seed's not there. But even in a year when it is, just more often than not, unless it is a big majority of a field and the rice is dead, we almost always have been better off keeping it. And you don't always know that you were better off because you don't have a non-treated out there like you would in a research plot. But I feel like we've been better off just because it's so hard to manage once you get into those late planting dates and then everything that can go wrong between then and fall time.
Oh, yeah, and between, you know, most of the time you've already got other chemical and input investment in that rice crop beyond just what's there. So we ended up looking for a few years at both variety and hybrid, you know, kind of, you know, response to really low stands. And we planted it in such a way that it gave us a really random, you know, very low seed counts. And I only accepted it as good methodology for the research once it came up and I saw what we had and I could walk through it and go, okay, this looks like three plant fields that I walk. So the, you know, this is pretty representative research. And most of what we found is if you end up down in the neighborhood of like roughly three plants per square foot on hybrid, you're probably off of maximum yield about 10%, maybe slightly higher. Again, if it's more random, you have some more like ones and zeros, you know, areas in there if you're doing square foot counts. But again, you start comparing, like we're kind of talking about, you know, if you planted April 1 versus replanting May 1st, like, well, between inputs and time and all this stuff, like, I'm about a wash, so yep. I'm going to keep it. And it's really about five plants a square foot or so on a variety. You can pick a variety in there. It works out about the same. And again, you take this year where you're not going to be replanting it to rice, and you're probably accepting slightly lower than that number before you were going to be willing to, your only choice would be punt to a different crop. Certainly. So, but I will say below three plants a square foot on hybrid and below five on a variety, the yield trends start to drop off pretty quickly in our data that we did several years ago. So it's a pretty gradual decline down to there, and then it starts to drop off pretty steep below that. So, you know, stands below that, I've seen them be exceptional against all odds when the environment and everything kind of worked in their favor. And obviously, you know, we would recommend stuff like pushing the pre-flood nitrogen rate a little bit. Not anything insane, but another 10, 20 units, depending on just how low it was, just trying to push some of that early tillering and get all we can out of those plants so they have more ready access to the nitrogen we put out there to kind of push them. But that's about the best we can do if we're going to keep it and we have some of those low standing. We're all going to deal with that this year with the start that we're off to and being early and just stuff happens. These calls are going to start coming in. I don't want them to, but I'm prepared for them.
Another layer to that off target situation, Jared, is when it's paraquat, it's never just paraquat. There's always something with it. We don't even recommend paraquat only treatments in our row crops. So there's always something else with it. And only occasionally are you lucky enough to know what that something else is. And that's usually when a guy does it to himself. And we've done work on that. That was part of Ben Lawrence's work several years ago, trying to identify what was with the paraquat. And it's just impossible. The paraquat, the injury is so great from that one component of the mixture, you can't ever tease out whether it had a PS2 with it or a PS2 plus something else like dual. Man, it's impossible. It just looks like paraquat. And therefore, that puts a little bit more doubt into a potential replant because some of that stuff you can't replant rice into.
No. Yeah, you're right. Gramoxone just covers the rest of it up, any other symptomology. So that's one I'm always, yeah, like you said, what else? It's kind of like I am with Liberty throughout the year. If it gets on rice, I'm like, Liberty and what?
Yeah.
What else was in there? Because that's what I'm more concerned with in that case. And most of the time, it's Select. Now I'm worried.
Right. Now you got a whole different beast then.
Yes. And speaking of Select, we were talking about some of that earlier, and this may not be as getting to the time of the year now with a lot of rice in the ground. Not as much of a problem, but definitely some concerns over select getting onto fields that are still going to be planted in rice, or, you know, I had one or two a couple of weeks ago that were, they did right, and they figured out after the fact that extra select had been splashed in the tank, and it was a higher rate than what should have been out there. I'm like, well, it's been 30 days, and that's not long enough. You're going to have to wait. In that case, I told them to disc it first, try to work it up, and there was some rain coming. Disc it, let it rain on it, and that'll help buy you some time, and then maybe you can go in there and still be successful, but there's no guarantees.
A quirky thing about those clethodim labels, and I haven't found one that is different, the intervals stay the same. So we use a huge range of rates for those products. It's all targeting ryegrass. Yep. Some people, excessive rates, in my opinion, but not unlabeled rates. The rate they use is within a range listed on the label, so they're not doing anything to violate the label, but it's a 30-day pre-plant interval to grass crops regardless of rate. You just take select max just because that's what we use most of the time in our plot work. So you can use 9 ounces of select max. It's 30 days until you can plant rice. You can use 24 ounces of select max. It's 30 days until you plant rice. Like you said, that doesn't quite add up in your head. It at least feels like it should be longer for one than the other, because you're talking about almost a 3X difference in the amount of product that's going out there. But by label, it's the same.
Yes. Again, that was part of the conversation we were talking about with feed and stuff earlier. It was, you might be okay still at the rate that's out there, but again, you don't have any seed to replant if this goes south. So the conversation may have been a little different in a different year. Again, with that in mind, that we don't, you know, there's not really recognition of differing plant back intervals for the rates, but this was not the year to walk that line.
Well, and then do your best to not spray at the windiest time of the day. I mean, that kind of goes without saying, doesn't it? And it's not like I was paying really good attention this morning while I was walking the dog. There was a breeze. It's not like it is now.
Yeah, we've progressed beyond breezy this afternoon.
Yes, I realize that.
It's straight windy today, for sure.
If we can avoid getting basically a May, a little more than just a month of May like we had last year for, you know, on this side of the river, is about 6 weeks of just a northeast wind through May. None of our herbicides were working that well. As grass was coming up, it was a little stressed. Obviously, the rice was a little bit too, getting a little desiccated, but just nothing was working very well throughout that window, and we struggled. And I mean, once the wind turned back from the south and the humidity came back up, I mean, things worked a lot better. But in some cases, you know, the damage was already done. Even we were throwing some pretty big hammers at some grass that wasn't that big. We really would have thought we would have gotten it, but conditions were just terrible for getting uptake and shutting them down. And so I'll take the breezy, but getting some breaks that we continue to get here and there between these storm systems of getting some days where the wind's laying down pretty good and we can do some good work with pretty decent conditions. But the wind is bouncing around all directions constantly, seemingly day by day.
At that time of year, when you got this little bitty grass that you're targeting, there's moisture in the soil profile, but that little bitty grass is germinating in dry dirt. Or I say germinate in dry dirt, there's moisture there for it to germinate, but then it's, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a moist profile soil condition that most of our rice herbicides would prefer. All herbicides need things to be actively growing, but most of our rice herbicides work a lot better when the ground's kind of soupy and not dry. But when you get that little bitty grass and then this wind's blowing and it dries out that top crust, you just got a little bitty plant that's growing in dry dirt and it's stressed. I mean, it's drought stressed, even though the soil profile is probably still fully charged.
Yeah, they just kick into survival mode. So they're just hanging on, trying to hold on to their own moisture at that point. So they're not trying to allow any to leave, which means they're not going to be taking much of anything up that we spray. I mean, we miss those windows. So again, fingers crossed we get that advantage this year that we don't see a turn like that. And the only thing I say every year, I don't know what the year is going to hold. I just know it's going to be different.
Well, man, Jerry, we appreciate it. I know you're busy. and everybody's planting over there just like they are here, where it has gotten dry enough over here at least. So we certainly appreciate it. Always enjoy visiting with you, and great insight on what's going on the rice crop so far this year.
Yeah, great to talk with y'all, and always happy to talk rice.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Thanks, Jared.
All right, y'all too. See ya.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is a production of Mississippi State University Extension.